What do you do when you want a snack, but all you can find is junk food? Do you have to rely on your self-control to resist temptation? Please, you end up eating the junk food. You could start snacking healthy with NatureBox. NatureBox makes snacks that actually taste great and are better for you, created with high-quality ingredients free from artificial colors, flavors, or sweeteners, so you could feel great about snacking. Even JT won't miss all that extra sugar. My personal favorites, I had the peanut butter pretzels from NatureBox, which are absolutely fantastic. The dark cocoa nom noms, always a crowd pleaser. NatureBox, they've recently made their service even better. Now you can order as much as you want, as often as you want, without a minimum purchase required, and you can cancel anytime. Just go to naturebox.com. Check out the whole snack catalog. Over 100 snacks to choose from. You don't need Cochran to advise you on which one to pick. And they're constantly adding delicious new snacks. Pick out the ones you want. They deliver them right to your door. And with NatureBox, you'll never get bored. New snacks each month inspired by real customer feedback. And if you try a snack that you don't like, NatureBox will replace it for free. Right now, save even more. NatureBox is offering Rob Has a Podcast fans 50% off your first order when you go to naturebox.com/RHAP. That's naturebox.com/RHAP for 50% off your first order at naturebox.com/RHAP.
Check it out.
Josh.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Do the wiggle, man. I do the wiggle, man. Yeah.
He's back. Josh Wiggler.
Oh, my God. That's me. Yes, I am the ghost that is sucking you into your television set and instigating a crazy poltergeist plotline right now.
Very deep pull, Josh Wiggler. And that is our favorite kind here in the Wiggle Room.
Yeah. Should I mention The Good Son again? That seemed to go over pretty well a couple of weeks ago.
So, yeah. How you doing? Did you take your Dramamine before you come on with us?
Yeah, things are a little woozy right now. I'm standing in front of my computer.
You're
and
not
I'm
gonna
just
hurl?
Kind of like, oh my God. Yeah.
Hurl
reports
coal?
Of, you know, reports of my hurl coal may have been greatly exaggerated is all I can say on the matter. That's all I can say on that particular subject.
When you throw up in a specific country, a hurl call?
Yeah. No. Right. I have not been hurl calling since I've been gone. Just the threat of hurl calling.
Yeah. All right. Well,
the
Josh,
triple threat. The triple
very
threat.
Excited to have you back. It's been a minute since we've had you here. Of course, we didn't get to talk about the JT boot, but I guess that's standard operating procedure with all of my regular podcast co-hosts when JT gets voted out. But
has Fishback finally weighed in on this? I'm really disconnected from the Survivor podcasting, too, by the way. I'm really behind on my RHAP, so I feel like I'm going to need you to catch me up here a little bit.
Yeah, it was Steven's dad's birthday, and they had a family trip planned last week, and Steven did weigh in on the JT stuff. Although his weighing in on it did not satisfy many of the listeners based on what I spread on social media. But it might have been for the best to have him not be weighing in on it while it was very fresh in everybody's mind. But we have so much to talk through here after another exciting episode of Game Changers, but another sad outcome as Sandra Diaz-Twine, the queen, has been dethroned, Josh.
Oh, my God.
The queen is still queen. The queen's,
the
I don't
queen
mean
is still queen.
She's, but
queen
she has been knocked out of the game.
The queen is still queen, but we have to say adios.
Right.
You know?
It's more like when the queen is taken off the chessboard and put on the side.
Yeah, now we're waiting to see which pawn can become a new queen, to continue the chess metaphor.
Yes.
Yeah, Sandra's gone. Look, Sandra went to like every single tribal council up to this point and didn't receive a single vote, and then she gets knocked out here. It's kind of a miracle that she made it as far as she went, being the only two-time winner in Survivor history. Really, you know, it's and the fact that like there was even a millisecond where these guys were thinking of, you know, voting somebody else out, like where Ty was maybe actually in danger for a moment there. I think it's pretty impressive. I think a pretty impressive run for Sandra, even though it didn't work out, and very surreal to watch Sandra get her torch snuffed as well.
Yeah, she was saying, don't do it, don't do it. Josh, did you think that she was going to pull it out?
What, the torch out of the hole and then like run away and like claim that she's still
no,
in the game and you can't
no,
catch me,
no,
you can't
no.
catch me?
Did you think that she was going to be able to convince them to vote out Ty?
No, what I thought was going to happen, I really felt like Sandra was toast here. But what I thought was going to happen was because Ty is, you know, the truffle pig of finding immunity idols and just has like the most incredible nose for these things. I really thought that Ty was going to be so alarmed that he was going to play one of his two idols on himself and everybody had decided to vote out Ty, but Ty's idol was able to negate that and take Sandra out of the game. That's where I thought we were going. And instead everyone just agreed to continue going after Sandra. But what an epic way that would have been to take out the queen.
And in my conversation with Sandra, she kind of said that that was the case, even though the idol was not played, that she claimed that Ozzy was very focused on Ty, was like kept pulling at like his pocket, thinking he had an idol. And Sandra felt like that the ultimate concern there was that Ozzy was worried they were going to vote for Ty and he had the idol, and then that Ozzy was going to get idol out of the game by voting out Ty.
That would have been crazy too. I really appreciated hearing them acknowledge on the show, like, well, the trend seems to be every single time we go to tribal council, someone major gets knocked out, and that's like the reasoning for Ty tossing Ozzy's name out.
Yes.
It was kind of a cool meta moment at that point. But yeah, that could have been an option. That could have been a way to go. That would have been pretty wild as well. But I really did think that Ty's performance in this tribal was so all over the place and his allies seemed so turned off by it that I really did think that the votes were going to go his way for a second there. And I thought that Sandra would squeak on, you know, one more day, which would have been crazy. That would have been really wild. It really is the thing, you know, Zeke sums it up really well. Whatever happened to everybody who said, I can get rid of her tomorrow? They never get rid of her. So finally, these guys are smart enough to go after Sandra Diaz-Twine. I think that's, you know, no reflection of Sandra other than her reputation is just what it is. And people have seen how she plays. And she is in this huge numbers disadvantage as an original mana. And it does seem like those original loyalties are holding. So it was Sandra's time. But the queen does stay queen.
Josh, we talk so much about the story of these different characters, and it's always especially fun when we can talk about a multi-season arc for these different survivors. How are you viewing this third time out? Is this the third and final chapter in a unfulfilled trilogy? Is this the exclamation point on a survivor career? How are you viewing this?
I think, you know, look, I think Survivor's going to bring players back again someday, and I think that Sandra's the kind of person who will go back every time she's asked. And I imagine, I have to believe that Survivor will ask Sandra to play again someday. I think Sandra Diaz-Twine will be a four-time player of Survivor. It's just a question of when. How do I view this? I think that Cochran, actually, special guest star John Cochran, I think he had a really good take on this on Twitter that I saw, where he tweeted at Sandra and said, I kind of viewed every single episode you were in the game as another victory. I think that that's right. I think that there's so many reasons to target Sandra first. It's something we've talked about a lot is, you know, Sandra is very lucky on her first two seasons that she's never at Tribal Council in the earliest days. And we've always speculated that if she is in trouble in those early days, she's going to go home pretty early because she doesn't necessarily contribute much on the challenge spectrum of things. We were proven very wrong this season. Again, Sandra went to, what is it, 5 out of 6 Tribal Councils before she got a vote?
We had always said that Sandra got very lucky in Heroes vs. Villains and Survivor Pearl Islands in that her tribe won the first couple of immunity challenges. She didn't have to go to a lot of early tribal councils. Here, she went to many early tribal councils.
Yeah, absolutely. And didn't net a single vote against her until the time came. That's really impressive for somebody with her reputation coming into this game for me. And I think a lot of that was on skill. I don't think that it was necessarily game-winning skill with this particular game. I do think that, you know, some of the strengths we've talked about with Sandra, maybe she moved away from a little bit where she, you know, often succeeds because she has an adversary in the game rather than actually getting to claim her adversary's head. But this time she was able to collect those scalps, as it were. You know, she's the one who leads the charge against Tony Vlachos, and she's the one who sugar steals her way into getting rid of JT here. When she, you know, has a vendetta to carry against him for the whole thing that happened with Malcolm. That's really impressive stuff as, like, you know, 3 days go in the game, you know, in terms of like a 3-day play. That's pretty fun stuff. I don't know how that is for long game. You know, I haven't really stopped down and think what was Sandra's path. Was there a path to the win? But I think that the 16 days that she did play in this game, should make you think that that's not impossible. You know, Sandra did so much better this season than she probably ought to have been allowed to, given who's out there, given what that cast is, and given how the numbers were starting to break. I think it's a really impressive run for Sandra. I think for the people who thought that Sandra just wins purely by luck and without any skill whatsoever, I think Sandra demonstrated a lot of her skill in being able to organize a vote. I think she showed off her strengths as being somebody who is a great friend to have in the game, a great ally to have in the game. When Sandra is on your side, she is an awesome person to play Survivor with. And when she's your enemy, she is the person to fear. She is the one who knocks. So I think that as far as Sandra's like long-term reputation, this only helped. I don't think that it, you know, I don't think there's any luster on the crown that's lost in the fact that she's voted out here. I don't think that just getting voted out means that you're a bad player by any stretch of the
imagination. Definitely not.
I think that she was destined to get voted out at some point this season, and the fact that she made it as far as she did with what she did under her belt, super impressive to me and really, really fun to watch the whole way through. I just wish that we had more of her. It is really brutal to lose her here.
What about moving forward? Let's say that hypothetically Survivor Season 40 is, whether it's some new version of Heroes versus Villains or Legends or whatever, some sort of like super all-star season that we have winners. Sandra is back there. Do you think that she made the target on her back bigger or smaller after this game?
I think it completely depends on who she's playing with. And think about if she's playing an all-winner season. I feel like Sandra gets along pretty well with a lot of the winners in Survivor.
Yeah, I think they love her.
I think they really, really like her. And I think, once again, to go back to that statement, I think that like the sugar stealing scenario is a really great microcosm of different ways to view Sandra. If you are on the wrong side of Sandra, you might get got with some plan that you had no idea even existed, that you had no idea that Sandra's fingerprints were all over that crime. She is a very scary enemy to have. But if she loves you, if you're her Krista, if you're her Courtney, if you're her Varner and Michaela in the case of this season, she is a great person to align with.
Yeah.
And I think that she made a very valid sales pitch on her way out the door to Varner and to Ozzy and those people. I think that she made a really solid pitch of why the Korong 3 could be dangerous and why I am a person to have your back. I'm very dangerous in this game. I have a big target on me already. You keep me around for a couple of more votes, and people are coming for me before they're coming for you. And I think it was a logical, sensible, honest thing that she was saying there. At least that was my read on it. And I would be attracted to that as a player. Like, if I were playing on a season with Sandra, I think that I would want to play with her. I think that this season proved it is better to be with her than against her.
I'm against you, Russell. Yeah.
So what do you think? What about you? What's your take? Do you think that the scope of the target on Sandra, is it wider now? Is it bigger now? Is she, you know, a more attractive person to go after?
Yeah.
Or do you think that this improves her odds for a future season?
Well, you just said something that was really interesting that I hadn't really thought about, that she has such a great relationship with so many of the other winners. I think in an all-winner season, I think that she would actually go pretty far. I think that she would probably be, just off the top of my head, I think top five or top six, baby, for a all-winner season. If it was like Legends and it was other great players, but other not necessarily winners, I think that there could be a lot of people saying that they were going to still come after her. But I think that she has just cultivated those relationships with the other winners to such a degree that I think even like Tony, you know, walked away from this season like having respect for, could they ever play and function together in a season? I don't know, but I bet they could.
Yeah. You know, especially now that they're part of this epic pre-jury trip, you know, with the best pre-jury trip crew ever assembled so far.
Like, who's the winner that really does not care for Sandra that is going to? I'm sure there might be somebody out there, but I think for the most part, they all speak really, really highly of her.
And I think that if Survivor is moving to a place where game respects game, and, you know, people want to play with people who understand how to play, Sandra, I do think, is a really attractive ally. I think she is a terrifying enemy. So if you know that you're not going to be able to play with Sandra, you really ought to get rid of her first, or very, very, very quickly. But if you see the value in working with Sandra, I think that she'd be a good ally to work with, and I do think that there would come a time late in the game where enough people would be like, all right, Sandra and what she provides, that's something that we now have to target. And it would be interesting to see how that unravels. You know, with the frequency of idols and everything, I would not put anything past Sandra. And certainly her social game, too. Would not put it past Sandra to be able to organize enough of a coalition to keep continuing in the game, even in the late game. I don't think that it's impossible that Sandra Diaz-Twine could win a third time. I think it would have to be the right circumstances, but I think that this time proved the value of Sandra and the danger of Sandra kind of equally. And it just depends on how what your outlook as a player is in terms of who you want to work with and who you want to work against.
Now, going into Sandra's friends and Sandra's enemies, Josh, I know you haven't listened to any of the podcast, but it's I have a little bit of a sad story to report that Sandra seems to be unhappy with yours truly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She's upset with you.
Yeah. She told me on the exit interview, she said, I almost didn't come on with you because you're, you know, talking about it with all these people. Is Sandra a game changer? And I tried to defend myself, and I feel like I've been nothing but complimentary about Sandra's game over these last 7 years. But she seems to feel like that I have been very critical of her.
I don't remember you being super critical of her. I even remember, you know, recording the Heroes versus Villains chapter of the Evolution of Strategy and you coming out of that really appreciating Sandra's game. Then again, I don't think that she's listened to the Evolution of Strategy.
Yeah, and I think so. You
know, I don't have the recall on the podcast to know what your public opinion has been on Sandra, but I can't remember you ever being, you know, really down on Sandra. I think that you've talked about, you know, Parvati and Sandra being on Mount Rushmore and everything like that.
So I don't get it. I mean, it's been a rough week for me. Philip Shepard also came for me on Twitter.
Oh, it's the worst when the specialist comes for you on Twitter. Yeah. It can be hard to understand what happened, too. Yeah. I think that happened to me once, and I still don't know what I did.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about it. But, you know, when we were doing the show after the exit interview, so yesterday I had gone to CBS. We're recording this on a Friday. Usually we record it over the weekend. But I went to CBS to go and record my Behind the Buff.
You went Behind the Buff. What does it look like back there?
Is it Behind the Buff or Beyond the Buff?
I don't know. Either way, Behind, what does it look like when you go BTB, what do you see?
So it was the same exact setup as what we did back in the preseason. And so I was in that dressing room there doing my exit interview with Sandra. And then when we went on live, Sandra was on Skype with Cochran and then Joshua Morrow. And they were all talking with Sandra. And I heard Sandra loves Cochran and she was chatting with him. And then I sat down and she saw me on Skype again. I don't think she knew anything about who was going to be hosting that show. And she said, Sester Nino, I thought I was done talking to you today.
Wow. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Then
there was a point where there was a question of Sandra, what players that would you like to play with that you've never gotten a chance to play with? And Josh, she named 20 survivors
that weren't named Rob Sesternino.
She started with, oh, of course, Cochran. And then she went on a whole list of different survivors. And I was like, I was like Heidi at the Final Tribal Council. Is there anybody else?
Yes.
Is there anybody else that you'd like? No, I think she said it. I think that's it.
Oh, so. No, I hate this beef between you and Sandra, or this goat between
one-sided.
You and Sandra,
I should say. I have not come out against Sandra at any point.
Yeah, well, that makes me very, very sad. I owe Sandra an exit interview. I am late on the exit interview with Sandra due to travel, was not able to get it done. So that's something that I want to do in the future for sure. Just a question of when I'm going to be able to. I will do everything that I can to smooth this over, Rob.
Okay,
I think it's a misunderstanding because I know
don't
that you love
me.
Sandra. I know you love Sandra. I know that you appreciate her certainly as a character, and I think you appreciate her game.
Yes. I think I just got sort of like the Stephen Fishback sort of proximity factor. I think she's upset with him, and I think I got some of that. But it's all karma because way back when I interviewed Brandon Hance, and he was mad at me, and then when he talked to me, he thought I was somebody else and then wasn't mad at me. So it all evens out. So Stephen Fishback.
Yes. Well, so that being said, you know, that we talked about this on the most recent Wiggle Room a couple of weeks ago. If Sandra's against you, Rob, Do you have to take Russell Hance up on his offer to align with him to go after Sandra in this theoretical legend season? Is that your only choice now if Sandra's not going to work with you?
There has to be another choice, Josh.
There has to be another option. Door number three.
Yeah, the zero-sum game.
Yeah. You can figure that out. You'll find your way. You'll find
Rob,
your way through it.
Got your back.
Yes. Well,
trust
Rob, I'm
me.
So excited. I'm
Use
so excited.
Me.
Reddit tells me that you're going to go back for a third time. So this is great news. So this is a problem you need to now start thinking about.
I did see that thread this morning. It does, burn me up when something I say sort of tongue in cheek has many more comments than the actual post about the podcast it was from, which only has a couple
it's
of comments.
It's a breakout. No, it's a breakout. I think it's a little bit of a clickbait
headline there of Rob Cisternino says he's open to returning to Survivor thread. I mostly was saying that the thought of staying at Ponderosa for 33 days used to really bum me out. And then I got married and had kids, and now I welcome it.
Wow. So you were really just like dragging Nicole and Dominic and Anthony.
Every
That's
morning when I'm like trying to make breakfast and, taking kids to go potty, I'm like, boy, I wish I was at Ponderosa right now. Oh, I wish I was voted out of Survivor on like day five. Nobody could reach me.
Oh, it's so dark.
That'll be my midlife crisis when I go back to Survivor. We're creeping in. So that's why I don't say never.
We're not already at the midlife crisis. We're just approaching it.
I mean, I'd like to think that I'm not quite at midlife. No. I mean,
well,
that's
who knows?
Kind of a dark story. But
that's also dark.
You never know. All right.
You never know. You got to live. You only live once, Rob, you know?
Josh, just quick, touching back on JT. We didn't get to talk about that episode last week. Do you have any thoughts on the legacy of JT 3.0?
It's a really tough look for JT. That's really disappointing. And I feel awful for him. I'm sure he feels terrible about it. I'm sure he feels, again, another person who I didn't get to speak to in the exit interviews. I'm behind by two right now. Was he really bummed out when you spoke with him?
I don't necessarily know if I would call JT bummed out from what I was talking to. I thought he did have an interesting point, which I think that the episode didn't really articulate, where that he felt like at the combined tribal council, if he could knock Sandra out, that sort of changes the dynamics of that new Nuku group, where he felt like that he had his hooks into Malcolm and he had a good relationship with Aubrey. And then all of a sudden, if they go to another tribal council, then he, Malcolm, and Aubrey control the balance of power and can dictate who goes home out of Michaela and Jeff Varner. So he sort of was like all in on, I need to take out Sandra at this spot because then I can control the votes. He'll be safe after that. So yeah. I thought that made a little more sense, but I think that he still sort of was pussyfooting about what he was trying to do. Like, he was trying to be sneaky JT, which I feel like is not a great JT.
Yeah, I think
Sneaky Sandra was good. Sneaky JT doesn't, or like a nice JT, make everybody like you, is good JT. Sneaky JT, not so good.
You know, it really does go back, and it doesn't always, you know, work this way, but I think in this case it does. It does go back to where his head was in the preseason, where he didn't regret the Russell letter. He regretted hopping off of a poll and not giving 100% in a challenge. He didn't regret taking a big swing strategically, like taking a huge risk in trusting this complete unknown, because if it had worked out, it would have been brilliant. And I think that he entered Game Changers really overly willing to do that. I think overly willing to take big swings rather than playing a little bit more even-handed. I get the idea of what you just said, what you just brought up, of if he does unplug Sandra there, then that's great. And he does have a new thing with Malcolm and Aubrey, and they're able to take control of the tribe. And that's awesome for JT. But I think that banking on that being something that you could have done in that spot, still, to me, and we, you know, I think that we talked about it a bit. I've certainly talked to people about it. I think it was too much of a risk. I think that the odds of it working out the way he wanted to work out were so astronomical that it's not worth taking that risk. And then it's a really bad look that he doesn't bring an idol to tribal council.
Yeah. Well, just to go back to the combined tribal council for a moment, that one of the other really interesting things from my exit interview with Sandra was I was asking her about the combined tribal council. And what Sandra said is that nobody knows this, but me and Brad were good. He was never going to vote me out. And she said, JT didn't know that. She said, JT is a snitch. Anybody who ever plays with him should vote him out immediately. Target JT if he ever goes
back.
And
oh, man.
She had a pregame alliance with Brad, and Brad was not going to vote her out. Brad wanted to keep her in the game more than he wanted to keep JT in that spot.
Yeah, I think the thing with JT, I think the thing with JT in that spot too is, you know, if they're gonna be able to get another mana out, and that's the fourth mana that they've now been able to take out, I think that they can afford to lose a Nuku, and I think that JT is somebody who they have to view as a threat at some point in the game and becomes an acceptable loss in this situation. So I totally see the logic of not playing the way, especially with that backstory of Sandra and Brad being connected ahead of time. It makes a lot of sense for me why they didn't go along with JT's pitch to vote out Sandra. It's tough. I think that, you know, in the way that I think stock rose for Sandra this season, I think stock lowered in JT's case. It's a really tough final couple of episodes, finding that idol and not even bringing it to Tribal. But I think even if he had it at Tribal, he wasn't going to play it. A testament to Sandra's game, I think, in terms of being able to convince him that things were going the way that they were going. Even was able to, you know, pull the rug over on Aubrey, who really thought that things were breaking the way they were breaking. And Aubrey's a pretty shrewd person. So again, I think that's testaments to Sandra's strength. I think that you could look at JT's performance this season, and if you're one of the people who says JT can't play Survivor without, you know, a Steven, not necessarily without Steven, but without a Steven, without a partner who is going to rein in some of JT's bigger ideas, which are awesome when they work, but need that sort of like calculated risk assessment element that Fishback brought to that partnership back in Token Sheens and made the two of them so fruitful. I think you have ammunition for that case after this season.
And I'm not necessarily in that camp.
Yeah, sure. Me neither. Not necessarily. I do think that, you know, JT could go back, and I think JT could have success again if he really, you know, digests the humble pie he was served up this season. But who knows? Who knows what the future will bring? If I were JT, I would, you know, my tail would be tucked between my legs a little bit, which, you know, that sucks. I do think it's a tough look for JT on his way out the door here.
My theory on JT is that he won Token Sheens. It was almost so easy for him. Everybody loved him in that season that he has become overconfident in his abilities in his second and third time out. I mean, Stephen Fishback doesn't say, oh my God, you wouldn't believe the number of terrible ideas I had to talk JT out of in Survivor right. Token Sheens. I mean, he wanted to do this. I was like, what are you, crazy? I had to talk him off the ledge. He was so impulsive. I was babysitting the guy 24 hours a day. I mean, Steven never says things like that. So he might say, well, actually, there was a couple of things that he did, that he tried to do that were kind of nutso, and we decided against it. But I just think he's like...
Well, I think to that point, you know, I do think that there's something about, like, when you're in the belly of something, you don't know what it looks like. And I think, you know, with the ease of the partnership between JT and Steven, maybe things were so... I think that there is no taking away ever the electricity of that partnership. That was one of the greatest two-person alliances in Survivor history.
Better just a than very, very... Brad and Troyzan?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm still not necessarily the world's biggest Troy fan, but we're working on it. I think that with JT and Steven, like, it's such a great working relationship in Survivor history. There's no taking away from that. But I think Steven, even if he doesn't say any of that, maybe it's because Steven's strengths were so strong in the partnership with JT, with JT's strengths as well, that those instincts were just kind of, you know, curbed just by sort of the alchemy of their relationship. But I hear what you're saying as well. You know, Steven certainly never says anything like that about JT.
Josh, let's talk about the Cochran twist. And I would love to just get your take on everything going on here. So, you know, we talked about in the evolution of strategy where that sometimes in Survivor history, we had a situation where, oh, Wanda and Jonathan don't get picked for Schoolyard Pick. They go to Exile Island, or they don't go to Exile Island. They go out of the game. Their game is over.
Yes.
But then we have other situations where, oh, you didn't get picked for Exile Island. You're immune for this round. Go on, you know, you get something good. And it's the same exact thing that happens to somebody. So we had Julia Sokolowski in this position. She had to go to Exile Island back in Survivor Ko Rong, and she's miserable. Here, the same exact thing happens to Debbie. She gets advantages, rewards, one thing after the next. It's like that she was on the Ellen show during the secret Ellen Santa week, and you'll get this.
And Cochran's the prank?
Is there a prank?
Like the viral moment, like the viral scare.
I don't know. I think we're mixing up our Ellen stuff right now. That being said, they both love to dance, Ellen and Cochran. Cochran's sure. A great dancer. I don't know if you know this about him.
No, I didn't know that about Cochran. Did you learn that on Beyond the Buff?
No, I knew that from beforehand. And people think I'm joking, but Cochran is actually an incredible dancer. But wow. That maybe one day there'll be video proof of this. But just to go back to this idea, did you like that Debbie got so much stuff? Her stuff.
Her stuff. I thought that it was a really fun TV moment. I thought it was great. I think that there's one of the reasons that I like it is I do think that the expectation when you go to Exile is like maybe there will be a silver lining, like maybe there's going to be an idol clue, perhaps there's even an idol somewhere in Exile, even if it's just a chance to gather your thoughts, even if it's guaranteed immunity through the next round. Those are typically the silver linings in what's otherwise a really lonely and bleak existence, is sort of the promise of Exile. So I liked that it was kind of subverted here. I liked that it was different. Also, I gotta imagine, like, you know, being on that boat, like, you're gonna be a little seasick, so maybe that's like the, you know, that's the downside, that's the drawback, instead of being on land. But I think that everything else, you know, it's unusual, it's different from what we normally get from an Exile experience. It was worth it to see Debbie dancing around all over the ship, especially after Debbie's meltdown the week before, which we didn't get a chance to talk about as well. So I thought it was a great continuation of that arc. Did you not like it? Were you not a fan?
No, I thought it was fine. I thought it was also an interesting choice to go with Cochran as the person to give you advice, because I don't know necessarily how many other people you had to choose from that could have filled that role of the mentor, the advisor.
Yeah, I think that Cochran is probably the best fit for that. He's a very recognizable survivor. He is a Survivor champion. He is a well-known Survivor Super Duper fan who has loved this show forever. Was such a nerd for it in his first season that he was actually, you know, not the best player as a result, was so overwhelmed with his excitement. And is somebody who is, you know, known for the quote unquote gift of the gab, is a TV writer, is a successful TV writer in his own right now. And is somebody who, as he mentions on the show, it feels like I've leapt off of my couch and through the screen and now I'm here. I think if any former survivor is ever going to pull a Rupert in this sense,
right,
you know, break the fourth wall and return for a one-off guest spot, I do think that Cochran made a lot of sense here. And one thing that I was thinking about too, which I got to imagine you've gotten into with people as well, is just like all the different possible permutations of how this could have played if Debbie isn't the one who draws the no buff. If it's not, yeah, Debbie who goes to Exile, like if it's Ozzy and it's a showdown, it's like a rematch there, or, you know, name just about anybody. It was going to be fun.
Yeah, I told Cochran himself. I said that yeah. I don't think there would have been a person that it would have been a bad fit. I think that either,
totally,
you know, you get somebody like an Aubrey and it's like, oh, two peas in a pod, or you get somebody,
meeting of the mind,
who it's like, somebody who is nothing like Cochran. And then, I think he's just such a distinct character that I think,
yes,
he would play off of anybody you put there, whether, you know, it's similarities or differences.
Yeah, no, that's exactly my take as well. That's what I've been saying to people for the past couple of days, is like, I feel like he's such a singular personality that you put him up against anybody and it's going to be interesting, I think. So like, you know, him and Debbie, you know, Debbie after her meltdown and not really needing advice, in her opinion, was a really fun dynamic. But you can imagine like the super awkward Cochran and Haley Ford date would have been really fun as well.
Yeah, I mean, Cochran and Brad would have been
great, like, size dynamic, I think, would have been good there. Even Troyzan, like, I feel like Troyzan's narration of that meeting could have been pretty incredible. There's pretty much no combination where it wouldn't have been pretty fun. You know, maybe you could rank it probably, and there's like a couple that would be a little more boring than others. But I think that a lot of, you know, him against Andrea again brings up old history. So Cochran was a really good fit for this, I thought. This isn't something that I want Survivor ever to do again, probably. I think that for a season called Game Changers, where the title invites some weirdness, invites some alteration to the game, I think that Cochran coming back here for a one-off, Survivor bringing in a special guest star for a one-off, I think it works in the context of this season. I don't think that I would need to see this ever again.
Let me just take your temperature. You were an unabashed fan of the combined tribal council. In addition to that, we also have the new wrinkle where ties at a tribal council go immediately to a rock draw. We currently have three hidden immunity idols in play, a legacy advantage, and an extra vote. We have had two tribe swaps through 6 hours of this season, Josh. Are you enjoying all of the machinations that we've done to the game here in Survivor Game Changers?
Well, I think the swap is expected at the very least, right? I mean, like, it seems like, you know, if you're following the second chance format, it went from 2 to 3 back to 2. So if I was a player, I would be expecting that. I think it kind of sucks just because the original starting numbers are what they are right now, and that puts Sandra and Varner in such a bad spot in this new tribe, and of course Sandra goes. And if this didn't happen, who knows? You know, who knows what Sandra could have done if her tribe, you know, of her and Aubrey and Michaela and Varner, if that's intact for a while.
Would you have preferred to see the three tribes stay until the merge, sort of like a Koh-Rong scenario?
Maybe. I mean, they were kind of, you know, I think even the new Mana was interesting with the Culpepper and Debbie dynamic, and now we've lost that story for at least a little while.
Like, if Aubrey went home this week, then you'd still be saying the same thing?
No, I'd be bummed. I'd be very, very bummed about it. I don't know. I think it's a lot. It's definitely a lot. I think for a season that is called Game Changers, I'm open to a lot, and let's see where it shakes out and where it takes us. But it is, as you listed out, that is a ton of stuff that's in Survivor, and we've really not had that much stuff in Survivor at this early stage ever before. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong. Just off the top of my head, I can't imagine it. So it is a bunch of stuff, and let's see how it plays out. I think this will be, you know, kind of a weight test, you know, as we move forward into the season, just how much baggage can Survivor carry? How much luggage can it carry? Like, how many artifacts can it have in play in one time before it's just too much to track, or if it makes the game too complicated, or if it makes any one individual too powerful? But I also think that the possibility of one person having two idols and somebody else having an extra vote and another idol in play, I think that there are a lot of potentially fascinating scenarios that can come out of it. So I'm open to it, but I certainly acknowledge that it's a weighty amount of stuff right now, for sure. No question about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I can't follow what's going on, but I do worry about a scenario where we have, much like at the Cambodia Final Six, where, oh, Jeremy's playing his idol, let me play my idol. Do we have a scenario where one person takes out their advantage, and then in some crazy Uno game, like, all the advantages get played at the same tribal council, where it's like the Final 13, Sierra Dawn Thomas is like, I'm not taking any chances. I'm playing the legacy advantage. Deb is saying, I'm playing my extra vote. Ty's playing his idols, both of them. Troy Zan's like, well, I got to play my idol too. You know, we just have like this poker game where everybody's just dumping their pockets out on the table, and we dump everything out of one tribal council. I mean, that might be pretty epic.
It might be really epic. I mean, what you just described sounds like a really epic tribal council. Maybe not something that I would want to be the norm necessarily, but it would be really, really wild. And I am good with good TV as long as it's also, you know, as long as it's easy to, you know, good TV has to be, you have to be able to track it. You have to be able to track what's going on in the story. And what you just laid out is very, very complicated. And I would wonder how you would convey that information.
Right. If you don't podcast
bomb
about
after
the
bomb
show,
after bomb,
or
right.
listen to podcasts about the show, would you be able to follow that scenario?
I would be curious.
And it's a tie vote that ultimately goes to a rock draw then.
Right. So, you know, it's a lot. It would be an absolute, it would be a butt ton of stuff. So I would say that I'd be open to watching it, and I would reserve judgment until we do the postmortem on something like that. But I think that what you lay out, there are pros to what you're laying out in terms of that being a very compelling case that we could find ourselves in. And you could also see how it's just like overwhelming overwhelming, just way too much stuff. But we won't know until
too
those things
stuff.
Start to play out. Too much stuff. Yeah, I think that, you know, we're not going to know until we start seeing that stuff play out.
And I understand the temptation to do it, because then you figure that almost every vote you have, at least the threat of something, it keeps it from being just a straight up and down predictable vote of, okay, well, we're going to vote out this person, but do they have an advantage? Is there an extra vote there? You know, it sort of gives the players more and more pause. And I think it invites the person who has the advantage to make a big move. But I think it also might at the same time stifle some people from making a big move because they're afraid of what people might have.
Yeah. So you think that it could be a dud, in fact, like, you know, just having all of this stuff, like you could see it just like not playing too strongly.
Yeah. You know, it's like a recipe. Sometimes maybe too many ingredients, not as good as like one distinct ingredient.
Yeah. No, totally true. Totally true. You know, on Top Chef, Rob, there was a guy named Katsuji who loved ingredients and loved to use lots and lots and lots of ingredients. And sometimes he would do very, very well. Oftentimes he would do poorly because he just threw way too much stuff in there, and it would be somebody who made a more elegant dish who would do really well in that challenge. Sometimes just like a simple, clean, four ingredient meal is what you want. And these 17 ingredient meals can be way too filling and can give you a tummy ache, and then you're hurl-coaling everywhere. So you just don't know. So you just don't know. We just have to see. We have to see which Katsuji we get.
Yeah. Kat Ederson Tsuji?
Is that Kat Ederson Tsuji, indeed.
So yes. Go back to Ty. Josh, you have always talked about the idea of a survivor bomb that needs to be dismantled. Are you liking this version of the survivor time bomb?
This is a scary
literally
one,
a
too.
Time bomb.
Yeah, time bomb. Yeah. He's got two idols in his pocket. I thought it was brilliant. How he got the second one in that episode, that he knew the trick and just went and did it. And he's like, oh yeah, let me go and grab that. Like I said earlier, I think that Ty is like a truffle pig.
Yeah.
He's not necessarily great at all aspects of Survivor. Certainly, you know, has a tendency to put his foot in his mouth at Tribal Council, especially. And that is, you know, bearing out this season and was really prevalent, across his first season. But there's no denying this man's ability to find idols. He really has a nose for it. And much like the truffle pig's use is, you know, utility is really in finding those truffles, Ty is just unstoppable when it's finding these idols. So kudos to him in that regard. The question is, how do you disarm a guy like that right now? Is it too much power for one man to have? You know, it wouldn't be unprecedented for somebody with two idols in their pocket to go home without playing a single one of them. That has certainly happened in Survivor before.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up James, because in the same way that James was able to find that other idol, now with Todd's instructions of, here's where I found this idol at our camp, it's in the signpost, go check out the signpost. They were, what was that, at John Who, and then go, and that's how he got the second idol. He didn't give the first idol back to Todd, which probably was, you know, maybe Todd decides to keep him around if he does something like that. But James with two idols, super dangerous, maybe much more so than Ty.
Yeah,
in terms of the threat to win.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I do think that this is a really dangerous situation for people. He is the kind of person that I could see being scared and being scared into spending an idol when he doesn't necessarily need to do it. But because he has two, like, he has a little bit of freedom to play an idol, you know, on like a fear, you know, on just like the slightest fear he could play it. That's a really scary dynamic. But I do think that, you know, as we're discussing with James, that situation has been dismantled before by, you know, really strong players in Todd and everybody who was involved in that situation, especially Custodian Denise, who is very, very strong. So I don't think that Ty is unstoppable with these idols, but he's dangerous. The threat level is high. I find that to be a fascinating story to track.
Is Ty trending towards another final 3-0 vote appearance?
Yeah, I think that you could see it. You could see it. I still think that Ty's ability to articulate why he deserves your vote. Like, I'm not seeing anything from him this season that shows me that he's learned those lessons. I think that the time that he had between seasons, you know, he had a year between playing, but, you know, a couple of weeks between seeing the end result of his season and then going out there and playing. I don't know that that's enough time to overcome those issues that he clearly struggled with on his first round out. So if he does get to the finals, unless he really performs some very miraculous stunts, I don't feel like Ty's, you know, final speech is going to be something that wins a lot of people over most of the time. But you never know. Maybe he's going to work on that over the next few days. He's going to start visualizing what that would look like. But I would bet against Ty being able to win this season. Yeah. Definitely.
Josh, what about Jeff Varner? Does he have a chance now as being the only other person left from original Mana on his new tribe?
Yeah, I think that the best chance he has is that Ty threw Ozzy's name out at this tribal council, and people might be really, really mad at Ty. And maybe now is a chance, you know, to the same thing of JT is an expendable number because there's such a clear advantage of the old Nuku versus the old Mana that if JT gets cut by this tribe and we lose that guy, it sucks. Because he was loyal to us, but we're still 9 Nuku strong. They could cut Ty now and they're still 8 Nuku strong. So I could see them, you know, having, you know, dismantled the Sandra situation if this tribe goes back to tribal council. I could see them wanting to go after Ty here, and then Ty does have that idol, and then who does that hit? That could be interesting. I don't know why Ty would in that situation be voting for Varner unless he was thinking that that's the decoy vote. But I actually think that Varner has some maneuverability in this situation right now.
Hey, Josh, last thing. So we are about 6 hours into this season. We haven't really done this yet. I'd love to just get a check-in from you in terms of Survivor Game Changers, however many hours it ultimately is, 13 hours, 14 hours. We're almost halfway through the
season. Getting there.
Yeah.
Closing in on it.
What has been your reaction to 6 hours of Survivor Game Changers?
I'm trying to find who tweeted it our way. Somebody said something to the effect of, like, it's just like the Red Wedding, but over the course of 6 episodes,
well,
you know?
I just feel like the Malcolm Tribal Council is the Red Wedding. And, you know, it's not quite as dramatic every time out, but it's been a bloodbath.
It's been a bloodbath. And through six episodes, and we're talking 6 episodes, right? We're still Survivor SDT.
Yeah,
that hasn't changed.
We are completely in sync.
DST,
I actually think there's a 2-hour episode coming up in a couple of weeks, which could throw us off again. But for now, I think everybody in the Survivor media and social media should be on. This was episode 6.
Okay, so currently we are on episode 6. Through 6 episodes, through 6 vote outs at least, let's say that. You know, most of them, and depending on who you are, all of them sting. We've lost some real heavy hitters along the way. And like we mentioned earlier in this podcast, and as was mentioned in the episode itself at Tribal Council, the trend is going after the biggest game in the jungle. And that sucks. That's tough. That's really, really hard to watch that happen. I think that the original Mana tribe, I loved a lot of people in that group, and we have now seen a lot of those people go really early. And to my mind, and I know that I'm probably going to offend somebody with this statement, we really have a lot of the baggage. We have like a lot of, you know, the players that you wouldn't necessarily think of traditionally as game changers still in the mix. People who have time to prove that they're worthy of the moniker Culpepper, and will be able to do something really extraordinary in this second half of the game. But we really haven't lost any of those people. And we've lost Titans. We've lost the only 3 winners that enter. We didn't lose Tyson. Oh. He's still alive. All these people are still good. But we lost the only 3 winners that entered Game Changers. All of them are gone pre-merge at this point. We've lost Malcolm. We lost Sierra. So it's tough. That's a really tough pill to swallow. Was it fascinating? Was it entertaining? I think that it's been really compelling television. But in terms of the game, the people that I've been rooting for, a lot of them are gone right now. Some of them are still in play, of course, but many of them are gone, and that's really, really hard to watch. This has been a tough season to watch on that level.
I would argue at least an entertaining 6 hours, while it has been
totally,
a
that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
I have been very entertained over 6 hours. I don't think we had a dud of an episode. I think that if any of them were
Dud Sergeant,
I'd say the Caleb boot episode. I think that was probably the weakest sauce. But I feel like that for the most part, I think we had a really exciting vote just about every single time out.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think that that's absolutely right. So I think that it's been, like you said, entertaining television for sure. No doubt about it. And I think that no matter what, I think that this is going to be an interesting case study of a season. Like when we get to this in the Evolution of Strategy Volume 4, I'm very excited to talk about it. I think that this is a moment for Survivor. And I don't know what we're living through yet, but we're living through something right now. You know, every season has a place in the history book. Every season feeds into one another in its own ways. And I can't wait to see what the fallout of this season is and how that bleeds into the future of Survivor.
All right, Josh. Well, thank you so much for making time for us in between traveling.
Yeah, don't say it like that. I'm really sorry that I missed two wiggle rooms already this season. I don't think that we're, you know, knock on wood, I think we're back. I think we're on track. I think that I'm going to be making it for all of these for the duration here. But sorry to leave you guys hanging over this last little stretch. Apologies both to JT and Sandra and the people who wanted to see those exit interviews, that those don't exist. But we're back in the saddle now, Rob. We're finally here. It's happening.
How did you feel, Josh, when I had asked the Rob is a Podcast patrons to give me questions for the Reynolds podcast I did last Monday? And everybody unanimously reacted with, nice April Fool's joke, not buying it, good one, yeah, right.
Yeah. Look, if it were me and I, you
it's
know,
it's just
going to
be Josh
that-
Wiggler doing a Reynolds impression.
I don't even do a Reynolds impression. Like, if it was Eddie Fox, then, like, I would see the joke. But no, I mean, I think that, you know, the timing of it being on April Fool's, you know, announcing that.
March 31st that I was asking for the questions.
Yeah, well, you know, here, that's more, I think, an indictment on April Fool's as an institution than anything, where April Fool's has become so tricky that we are now just like dodging bullets left and right because we're so afraid that we're going to get pranked. And it does sound like a little bit of a prank that you're going to do. You know, this, but I'm so behind on the podcast, but it seems like the reviews on the Reynolds podcast were really positive. It seems like it was really somehow Colby's involved. I can't wait to find out.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to
it.
I've got a lot
fun.
Of catching up to do on my next flight.
All right. What's the hashtag, Josh?
Oh my gosh. Well, Hurl Cole was an early front runner. Ty Bomb was pretty good as well.
Yes. And Kat Ederson Tsuji. Hurl Cole was fun though.
Yeah, I think that was good. I like Hurl Cole.
Okay. All right, Josh. Well, great stuff. Great to have you back. Follow at Round Howard. I don't know how much other stuff you've been putting out there, but whenever Josh is back at it, at Round Howard.
That's the place to be. Yeah, a little quiet on social media for the past couple of weeks and probably for another week here. But then I'll be tweeting up a storm, Rob. You won't be able to miss it. And
then we're going to be back with Why Sandra Lost with David Bloomberg coming up on Tuesday. So be on the lookout for that. Subscribe to the podcast, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes, to make sure you don't miss an episode. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.